Welcome back to Just Scrap Radio on BJPenn.com. I'm your host, Cole Sheldon. In episode 8, we have 4 guests for you. First off, we're joined by the voice of the Octagon, Bruce Buffer. We talk about his career, some new projects he's working on, including a new brand of alcohol, which is coming out soon, which should be interesting. A lot of MMA fans should definitely try to get that. We talk about DC Stipe. We preview some big fights, Adesanya Costa, Gaethje, Habib. We just talk about all things UFC in this one. Next, we're joined by Giga Chikadaze to preview his August 29th showdown against Alex Caceres. Really intriguing fight. Giga Chikadaze, undefeated so far in the UFC, has a lot of hype behind him. Main training partner, Beneil Dariush, works a lot with Kelvin Gastelum. He's a guy that I think if he beats Alex Caceres, I wouldn't be surprised if you see him get a ranked opponent next. Next up, we are joined by the first boxer of the program, Clay Collard, former UFC featherweight. I'm sure you probably have heard that name. Now he's 5-0 in boxing. He's one of Top Rank's brightest stars. He's beaten a lot of top prospects. They're really starting to push him. We talk about his kind of run in boxing, him still being under contract with PFL. He's supposed to be a PFL lightweight this year. We talk about whether or not he thinks if he's going to go to PFL next year because he's having a ton of success in boxing. I know PFL $1 million at the end, but maybe sticks with boxing, gets those big paydays we see a lot of these guys get. And finally, we're joined by Zach Cummins to talk about his fight on August 29th against Alessio De Chirico. We talk about his last fight against Omari Akhmedov, the loss at UFC 242, and how he just wants to get that one back. Just maybe fight Akhmedov down the line. He wasn't too impressed with his performance against Weidman. So we talk that. We talk about him training with Anthony Smith, James Krause, all those guys, and what a win over De Chirico does for him. Hope you guys enjoy the show and be sure to share it. Thanks.
All right, we're joined by the voice of the UFC, Bruce Buffer. Bruce, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Cole?
I'm doing well. Let's just get right into it. We just obviously had DC Stipe. When you're calling those fights, like, does part of you think, like, I have to nail this introduction just because there's so many people watching?
It's not so much that. I mean, I always go out to give 150% every time I walk into the Octagon because I've said it many times. Every night I walk out, like last Saturday, that's the night I have to prove to myself that I deserve this job. I want to make sure that I'm doing it right by Dana White and the powers that be, by the fans, the great fans watching, because it's all about the fans and the fighters to me. And when I'm there with no audience in the Octagon with two great warriors like Stipe and DC, I'm staring into the eye of the tiger. So even when there's 20,000, 50,000 people in an arena, as I've done and announced in front of, when that moment happens, it's always me and the fighter. So I'm always concentrated on the fighter, he or she, to get them going, to enhance that moment far beyond the moment they're experiencing walking into the Octagon, and also to enhance the moment for the fans as best I can too. So it's kind of like I've done so many movies and TV shows and even the videos I do here at Buffer Enterprises that they order through my website, brucebuffer.com, I do in front of green screens. So I'm creating that excitement, whether it's a movie or even a simple green screen video doing a championship introduction for a fan. I have to maintain that excitement. And so I'm used to that and I want to bring it every time. So in my head, I'm envisioning on the left side, 20,000 people around me, but right in front of me is just me and a great warrior that's standing in front of me.
Has it been any different for you, introduction with no fans? Like, you're not hearing that roar of the crowd when you're doing, like, the it's time?
Yeah, again, when I'm there, I actually block the fans out. When I get out of the Octagon, like the first time we went back to Brazil and Sao Paulo back in, like, whatever it was back in 98 or 2003, whatever that situation, Stitch Duran told me when I walked out of the Octagon, the famous Stitch man, he said, "Did you hear that, Buck?" I go, "Hear what?" He goes, "The entire arena just said it's time with you." I didn't hear it because I am so mentally focused on the fighter, and this is just the way I am. I don't hear it until I watch the show on TV, right? Because that's a very compelling moment for me. I'm so passionately into that moment every time I do it that I just can't get out of it until I'm done with it, you know? That kind of thing. So yes, that's the fact, but I've learned to embrace it. The show must go on. And I think more importantly now than ever, an entertainment performance value from all of us is needed at the show without the fans being on the show.
You've also introduced some of like the biggest fights of sports ever seen. This past one was, for a lot of people, was considering the best heavyweight of all time. Like, what were your takeaways of that fight? Because I thought Stipe won the fight, but I did not expect that fight to go the distance.
Well, I didn't expect to go the distance, but when you're fighting a great warrior, one of the greatest heavyweight now, as you can say about Stipe Miocic, you cannot take anything away from DC Cormier. He did very well in that fight. We know he got poked. We know he dealt with the injury that that happened. But that fight was going back and forth and back and forth. And DC always finds ways to win. So there's no way to predict a fight where DC Cormier walks in, because he can go any which way but lose. You know, and Stipe, the gentleman that he is, I had him on my It's Time podcast last week. He's just such a fine individual. Great role model for the sport, as DC Cormier is. It was an amazing night. It really was. And what a fight. The fight was awesome.
And coming up, the UFC, like, even with no fans, they're continuing rolling on some amazing fights. Like some title fights announced, Adesanya Costa, Khabib, Gaethje. Like, what one of those ones are you more looking forward to? Because you can make a case for both of them.
Yeah, you can make a case for both of them. But, I mean, listen, who doesn't love to see Gaethje fight? And who doesn't want to see Gaethje fight in the Magomedov? Okay, we all do. But Paulo Costa and Israel Adesanya, the build-up to this fight, Paulo was on my show a few weeks ago, and it's truly distaste and dislike between each other. This is not a fabricated, you know, let's sell it, let's make, you know, sell pay-per-views. Everything leading up to this fight is really, really enticing and exciting. And both individuals are very dynamic. They all have the it factor, all four of these individuals involved in both these fights. So much to look forward to, my friend. But the Paulo Costa Israel Adesanya fight, yeah, that's going to be off the hook.
With Khabib, if he goes out there and beats Gaethje, do you think they kind of have to do that George fight?
They don't have to do any fight. It's just that when you think about it, like, listen, a fight that I always wanted to see was Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre. So Khabib's got a great attitude towards fighting George. We'd all like to see George fight, you know, for the right amount of money in the right situation, and George being into the fight, he would fight. I have no doubt about it. It's just another great thing to look forward to. And there's so much entertainment to look forward to. It's crazy.
If they do end up fighting, do you think the winner of that, would you think they're probably either the greatest or probably just behind Jones is the best of all time?
Wait, is Stipe and Jones fight?
No, if Khabib and George fight. Do you think the winner of that, do you think they can make the case they're the best ever?
You know, listen, we all like to make those cases. We all like to say the best ever, the greatest ever. I think it's all a matter of that perception is reality for most. In this case, you have a great, legendary, greatest, one of the GOATs of all time in George St. Pierre, who's been out of the octagon for what, 3 years, 2 years, or however long it's been. It's more of a super fight, you know, and then it's about how you look at them, how their records read, how you as an individual fan read the fighter. But there's no question about it that both the Magomedov and George St. Pierre are two of the greatest mixed martial artists of all time. I can say that right now. I mean, I wouldn't have to wait for that fight to say that. I have a hard time saying who's the greatest, because in my situation, I've announced every single fighter that stepped in that octagon for 25 years almost. So I've seen more great fights and more great fighters come in and out of the octagon than most anybody, as you have watching on TV or when you go to live events. It's very difficult. The moment I say it's the greatest fight, 2 months later, the greatest fight. The moment I say the greatest fighter, 6 months later, more happens. It's the greatest fighter. That greatest fighter that was the greatest fighter comes back once again. Now he's the greatest fighter. This is just the beauty of our sport and the beauty of the entertainment that the UFC provides us.
Well, like you mentioned, you've been doing this 25 years. Do you ever think of how much longer you have going? Because you're still the guy when, even when I have friends over, we have to turn up the volume to hear your introductions. Like, they like it that much.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm very humble about the whole thing. That makes me feel really cool. I really appreciate that. You know, here's the thing. I'm all about passion. Everything I do is with passion. And that's the reason I announce the way I announce. And when that passion starts to wane or I have issues with it for any reason, which is not my case right now, it just gets stronger and stronger, then yes, that's the time that I will probably announce it. It's time for me to retire. But I would say you're stuck with me for at least another 10 years if you want me to stick around. So it's okay. I'm in great shape. I stay in good shape. And, you know, I train to travel. I train to work. I train to live. I train to be happy. And I'm lucky to do what I love to do. And that's something that I can be very, very happy and humbled about. So I hope that continues.
Is there anything during the week you have to do to keep your voice, like, good for Saturday nights?
Yeah, just don't damage it. Don't do anything that's going to hurt it. Don't smoke. Don't, you know, all that kind of stuff. And just take care of it, you know, like you take care of your body. Your body's your temple, you know. In this case, my throat is my tool. So I just do the basics, stay healthy, and don't abuse it. You know, kind of the secret of life for everything, for our body's entirety.
You've called every almost basically like all the big fights. Is there one fight or one moment for you that sticks out as a top career moment for you?
There's a number. Like I said earlier, it's hard for me to pinpoint one. There's a number of career moments. You know, when you think back to, you know, UFC 100, when I faced the monster Brock Lesnar and pulled off the 360 that everybody was egging me on about with the fans and Joe Rogan on the internet for months and months and months. That was a very important moment. UFC 200 culminating into that great night, which was just an historical moment for the UFC period. Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin at the end of the first Ultimate Fighter finale, you know, when we drew so many viewers and it basically set the pace that put the UFC back on the map, or on the map, you know, and that rocket ship started moving upward like crazy. There's just so many moments. Life is about moments. That's why I wrote my book, It's Time, because I wanted to remember that I forgot. You know, now it's time again to write another one, so I can remember what I forgot. So.
And you were obviously in Fight Island for a bit. What was? Are you looking forward to heading back out there? Because obviously, all the talk is they're going to go back out there.
Oh, Abu Dhabi, Fight Island?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, you know, here's the thing. Travel right now is not the travel that we're accustomed to over the years. I don't know when it's going to get back to where it was or if it ever will get back to where it was. So the only thing we can do now is embrace the situations we have at hand. I mean, how can I argue with going over to Abu Dhabi and staying at a fine hotel like the W and all that? Okay, I can complain about, you know, maybe the fact that I have to sleep during the day and stay up all night to maintain that, you know, the time zones of starting shows at 2 and 3 in the morning. And then we're in a safe zone and we can't go out and do a bunch of stuff, but then we can go out and do some stuff. There's pluses and negatives. The bottom line is it's an adventure. And I think anybody watching this interview would, if I complained even about going there, would be like, what are you complaining about? You're going to Fight Island. You got a great seat for the great warriors in the UFC. You work for the UFC. You're the voice of the Octagon. I have nothing to complain about, Cole. Mine is, Rudyard Kipling wrote a poem one time. It's one of my favorite lines. I'm a media mercenary. They point, I shoot. And what Rudyard Kipling said is, mine is not to reason why. Mine is but to do or die. And that's how I live. That is my code of ethics.
I don't... Yeah, you're a guy, you're always busy. Like, I see you have your podcast, you do a lot of those cameos. How do you have spare time? It seems like you're always working.
I don't even know what spare time is. I think I think basically what I always tell everybody, like when I do my branding and marketing speeches or motivational speeches, I tell everybody, bottom line, think about what you're passionate about. And if you can monetize it and turn into a job, you're not going to work. You're living a lifestyle. So it's a matter of living that lifestyle. And that's the lifestyle I've chosen for myself. Yes, I do a ton of cameos every month. They're a great service. Yes, the orders that come in for videos and audios for weddings and birthdays and championship introductions and birth of babies that people write me at brucebuffer.com for. I love doing all that. I charge very inexpensive. I give partial proceeds to animal, military, and children charities. And the thank you notes that my partner Chris and I get are amazing. It makes everything worthwhile. You know, in this COVID-19 situation, people are really looking for entertainment. And we're happy to provide it for them and light up their birthday, light up their wedding, light up whatever. That's the name of the game.
And just
pay it forward. And then I'm working on a new project, which you may or may not be aware of.
I was just about to ask you about that. That was my last question. Is you're obviously launching the alcohol. If you want to talk more about it, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, I've been working on this for over a year. Called Puncher's Chance. It's the finest bourbon on the market, okay? And I say that very strongly. There are other fine bourbons, you know, Bullet, and a lot out there, Woodford and stuff like that. This is a $60 bottle that's going to retail for $34. It's being released next week. You can follow me on Instagram at Bruce Buffer UFC. It'll be in 8 states to start, and we'll really blow it out next year, but it's a very big project. I'm very excited about it. We secured roughly about 50 to 100,000 barrels of the finest Kentucky bourbon you can get in Kentucky. And it's coming out. The bottles alone weigh 4 pounds. That's the quality of the glass. The glass is made in Europe. It's really very first class. I'm very excited about this. So Puncher's Chance, I know you probably love the name, Cole, because we're all in the fight.
Yeah.
But it's all about how one punch can change the fight. One punch can change your life, can change anything. It's all about the underdog, and I've always been about the underdog my entire life. I've been an underdog and been able to get on top, as well as, you know, suffer the knockdowns. That's what life's all about.
Well, whenever you get up in Canada, I'll be sure to get a bottle. But Bruce, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it too, Cole. You guys do a great job over there. Keep it up. I definitely follow you guys too. You follow me. Thanks so much. Thanks for all the respect. Thanks for having me on the show. And all your listeners, get ready because I'll be warm for the next 2 weeks. I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll see. It's just a temporary spot over. Sometimes I feel like James Bond, like I get that call. I got to put a tuxedo in a bag and get off to where I have to.
And hopefully all right, thank you so much again.
All right, cheers, man. Take care.
All right, we're joined by top-ranked boxing. One of boxing's brightest stars, Clay Collard. Clay, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. You picked up another win on the weekend. That's, 5-0 now in the – you're 5-0 now. Yeah. What's been the difference for you? Because this year you've really kind of came out on your own. You're a guy that Top Rank was putting against a lot of prospects to try to build over, and then now they seem to be pushing you finally.
Yeah, man. You know, I just when we first signed with Top Rank, I showed up and I was fighting an undefeated prospect, and I put it on him. So I think they were impressed, and they want to see what I can do. So I'm excited.
Well, what's it like, cause you've been a guy fighting off, you fought like June, July, and now August, you're fighting every month at Top Rank. Was that kind of the goal once you signed there, is just be active?
Yeah, man. Just, for me to get a bigger fight, I'm going to have to get some more wins under my belt, And so, I don't want to take 3-4 years to do that. I want to try to get those wins up there as quick as possible. So
and you were a guy that you were in the UFC, you got cut. What made you switch from MMA to boxing?
So, I don't believe it's a permanent switch yet. But we started doing the boxing to just help my all around fight game. I boxed growing up and I boxed when I was younger, and I had a pro fight in boxing, and took some time off and just coming back, I started winning fights, so we just kept pushing for it. So.
And you're probably one of not even just like boxers, maybe MMA fighters too, that's had 5 fights this year, especially with a lot of stuff closing down. Like, is it still like surreal for you to have this many fights and be undefeated this year, just with everything going on, and there weren't many events throughout the year?
Yeah, I fought a lot last year too. I fought 11 times. There was one time I fought like 3 times in 1 month, 2 or 3 times in 1 month. So I've always been, really active and a guy who gets a lot of fights. So 2020 is just, we were lucky that there's a lot of people, especially in the fight game that can't get fights anywhere at all. So we've been really lucky and blessed to be able to stay as active as we have. I think I am the most active fighter in 2020 right now. So
blessed, man. You're coming off a TKO win over Maurice Williams, but do you think that David Kamansky win is probably your biggest of the year? That guy had a lot of hype. He was undefeated, Top Rank. That was someone Top Rank was really pushing. Even on the broadcast, they were talking about, oh, this guy's something special.
I've been calling myself the O collector. So I've just been trying to collect some O's, Kamansky was one of them. I got a lot of publicity off that fight, and a lot of good thing happens from a lot of good things happened from that fight. But I've took out a handful of top prospects. So he was definitely a tough fight, but I have 4 or 5 of those. So,
and you're someone that, like, you were a massive underdog, and now you're starting to get these favorable match, or you're starting to become the favorite. Like, did you embrace being the underdog in a lot of those fights? Because a lot of people were
think viewing you as just a stepping stone to build up these undefeated guys?
So in my own head, I've never been the underdog, you know. In my own head, I'm one of the best, and I'm going to work to be one of the best. And so, you know, in my head, I never felt like the underdog personally, but, you know, stack the chips against me. Go ahead, man. I'm gonna show up and take them. So
I know you were supposed to fight Devontae Smith at UFC 241. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. Looking back, was that kind of a blessing in disguise because now you could have all this success in boxing?
You know, I believe everything happens for a reason. I believe there was a reason why the fight didn't go through. The way things have panned out this year and what's going on with boxing and everything like that have been great. So, was it a blessing in disguise? Probably. But you know, who knows? I could have won that $50 million bonus that the guy fought made. So. You know, but I do believe everything happens for a reason, yes.
And entering this year, you were making your return to MMA with PFL. Are you still under contract with them, or are you technically a free agent in MMA?
So I am definitely under contract with PFL still. They've been kind enough to allow me to box and feed myself during this pandemic. So I got to give a huge special thanks to PFL for letting me do that. And yeah, next year, man, 2021, hopefully the everything plays out and the season can start up and I'll be gunning for that $1 million. So
will PFL still let you do boxing matches next year if you are part of that season?
If it's during that season, during the season time where, you know, I'm going to be fighting. I'm going to be busy fighting. I think I have a fight every 6 weeks or something like that. So I'm going to focus on that when that time comes and, you know, just go out there and try to win that tournament. And then, you know, after the fact, after that is over, however it plays out, I'll just weigh my options and go from there. So.
And obviously winning the PFL $1 million too. What would that be like for you getting that $1 million prize money?
I just want to get a house so I can bring my dog out here, man. I got my little puppy. He's been on a farm for a couple of years and not with me. So, I want to be able to make some money and, you know, take care of business in life. And I chose fighting to do that. So, yeah, $1 million, man. That of course that'll help. So,
your boxing, have they Top Rank talked to you after this weekend of when they want you to get back in there?
So we've talked about September. We've talked about maybe the month after that. Just kind of, we're waiting to see what happens, you know. But I'm ready to go tomorrow, man. So. Whenever it happens, I'll be ready.
You're a guy who didn't even take much damage in your past couple fights. So how important has that been, just being able to let you continue fighting month after month?
You know, any time that you can get a fist fight and walked away unscathed or not hurt is a blessing. You know, it's a great thing to be able to fight and, you know, go right back out there and do it again. So. I've been very fortunate not to have any injuries or not to take too many hard shots or anything like that. And hopefully we can keep the ball rolling.
When, assuming PFL does a season next year, do you think automatically people are just going to try to take you down right away?
I think they're stupid if they don't. But, you know, you never know. There's good kickboxers. There's good Muay Thai guys. You know, that the striking is different. There's kicks, there's elbows, there's knee. Oh, there's no elbows in PFL, but there's knees. So everything's a little different. But, I don't see anybody in the tournament trying to stand and throw, you know, trade blows with me. So.
And you've been a guy, too, that you've really done all these fights, no fans. How different does that make your boxing, just having no fans there?
Matt, I've actually really enjoyed it. I wasn't too sure at first how I'd feel, but Matt, it's just really calm. You know, you can really collect your senses and you know, think. So I've enjoyed fighting with no fans. I love fighting in front of fans. You know, I feed off their energy and you know, that's why I do this, just put on shows, man. So you know, I can't wait till the fans come back, but I've enjoyed the time with them gone as well.
You're someone in the UFC, Ron, you fought a featherweight, but now you're fighting at 168. Is that a better weight for you, do you think?
So my preferred weight's around 155 pounds. When I was with the UFC, I never wanted to cut to 45. That was something, you know, my manager and my camp had decided, you know, they wanted me to try to go to 45. They thought I was too small for 55, but, yeah, I've always felt comfortable at 55, man, around 155. I don't burn myself out cutting the weight. So I have the endurance, you know, I have a little speed edge on most guys at 55, where at 45, I don't. And I've never felt overpowered there. So, yeah, my preferred weight would be 155 for sure.
Do you think you're closing in on, you know, become like a co-main or a main event on some of these top rank cards? Cause like I've said, top rank's really starting to push you.
Yeah. You know, I got a long ways to go. I'm definitely not where I want to be yet, but I'm getting there. So, you know, I'm just going to keep pushing and keep winning fights. And, you know, if that time comes, I'll be ready for it. So.
And just last thing, obviously you are with PFL next year, but how much are you still training MMA, or is it most the focus just on boxing right now?
So we've been focusing a little more on boxing just because that's what we have, you know, on our plate in front of us. You know, as soon as the year starts coming to an end and we start focusing on, you know, mixed martial arts, then we'll switch things up. So,
well, actually just one more is, how many more boxing fights do you can get in this year?
What do we have? 4 months left?
Three, four.
Yeah. I'm trying, maybe three or four, man. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, Clay, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yep. Good one, man.
All right. We're now joined by one of the rising stars in the featherweight division, Giga Chikadze. Giga, how's it going?
Going good, my brother. Thank you.
Yeah. Already 2-0 in the UFC, looking to go 3-0. What's with you in these quick turnarounds? Is this something you wanted when you got to the UFC?
Yeah, man, it's been a long time. You know, I was preparing for this career to do my transition from kickboxing to MMA, and that was all the dream to make happen when I moved here in the United States. And I feel like everything together came right on time, and now I just want to be busy and do my thing really fast and really quick, because I really had a big career in kickboxing, and MMA fans still do not really know me well, so I'm excited to show them what's up.
And a big name in Alex Caceres, a guy that's been around for a while. Is this the kind of next step you wanted?
Oh yeah. I tried to schedule the fight against Edson Barbosa, because he's supposed to be one of the best strikers inside the UFC. That's what people say and fans say. And I really like his style as well. But looks like he was not really interested. I don't know what was the reason of that. But yeah, so he didn't answer me. And second option for me was Alex Caceres. This was because of my, I mean, I watched this guy's fight like 10 years ago, you know, back in the days when I was in Georgia, and I always wanted to, hey man, I said to my friend one day that I'm going to fight this guy, you know, I feel like I can do very well against him. That was 10 years ago, you know, but I like this guy's style, man. He's really nice to watch, exciting fighter, And I feel like that's when my wings gonna shine in this fight, you know, that's exactly why I wanted to fight against him. It's gonna be super exciting fight, and that's what people wanna see. I believe in that, and fans gonna enjoy with this fight.
And Bruce Leroy is a guy that likes to throw down. He likes to keep it standing. Like, style-wise, are these the kind of guys you want? Because we obviously know your kickboxing background. Just guys that want to strike and trade with you.
Say again, what was the question, brother? Yeah, but I mean, he's an exciting fighter, and I know that he's going to come forward.
How do you see this one playing out?
Oh, I feel even he's a super good striker. He likes to throw everything out of pocket and come forward. I believe he's going to try to take me down. That's going to be everybody's plan in UFC when I will be fight. I know that's as a fact. I fought all my opponents were strikers. Since I fight in UFC, I have 3 fights and everyone was a striker. So that's what they call themselves. But everyone tried to take me down, you know, at least like 3, 4, 5 times. So I don't think Alex gonna be the something different, you know. Of course, I feel like he's a better striker than anybody else I fought in inside the UFC. But he's still gonna try to take me down because they don't think that I have a jiu-jitsu. They don't know how good I am in wrestling now. But that's a big mistake, and I'm excited all this to happen, you know, because I have better wrestling defense now. Actually, I do a good takedowns. I got some good throws, and people don't know that I've been a blue belt already two and a half, almost 3 years inside jiu-jitsu, and I've been competing a lot in jiu-jitsu. So I'm excited to show up there and show my new skills.
And we've seen Bruce Leroy get submitted, but he has not been knocked out since 2015. You obviously have a ton of knockouts in kickboxing. Do you think this is a fight where you can get your first UFC knockout?
Actually, I saw his one knockout fight. He lost with knockout, but he was complaining kind of. He was not really out. Doctor stopped the fight. I'm planning this fight. I don't want this to happen in the first round. I don't want this to happen in the second round because I know I know how to let MMA fans to enjoy. You know, I'm good at that. You know, when I fight exciting style, and I know that Alex is the same way too. You know, he has some exciting skills, so I want to finish him in the third round. I got a beautiful game plan too. So if everything goes by plan, you guys need to expect something big firework in the third round, and that's going to be called knockout. It's going to be actual real knockout for this guy.
And your fight, it was scheduled for August 8th, got moved to the 29th. Was that something the UFC wanted, or what was the reason for the delay for 2-3 weeks?
I heard he asked for it. I heard he got a little injury. I'm not sure if that's the right thing. That's what I heard. So it was from their side. Somebody asked, I mean, Alex or his team asked that if we wanted to fight for 29. Or actually, UFC told me also that they could replace with somebody else. But I mean, to wait a little bit was even better for me because I had to cut a lot of weight. And so now everything goes by plan. Drinking my shake, doing my weight cuts.
Are you hoping a win here gets you a ranked guy next?
Oh yeah, definitely. He's been a couple of times main event, co-main events, and he's been in UFC 10 years. Definitely, he's one of the biggest names inside my weight division. And if I'm not ranked after this fight, I believe I'm going to fight next fight to ranked opponent.
Does the top of the featherweight division excite you? Because you look at a lot of division, like bantamweight, lightweight, welterweight. A lot of the top guys are wrestlers. But featherweight, a lot of the top guys are strikers. Like you have Korean Zombies, Abid, Yair. They all like to strike. So further down the line, does that excite you? Or it's just going to be a straight strike matchup and those could easily be fight of the nights down the line?
Yeah, I'm super excited in this division. I know that there are a lot of top striker, top top general MMA fighters inside the featherweight division, but I'm always down to jump in and fight a lightweight or even a welterweight. I want to fight one day for the BMF belt too. You know, that's who I am. You know, only, I mean, first thing first, but yeah, that's a future plans as well. You know, so for now I'm staying in featherweight and I'm doing step by step, and I'm going to demolish everybody in this division and then going to see what's going to be next.
You just mentioned there that you think you see yourself at lightweight in a while. Like, is it a tough cut down to featherweight, or do you just think once you get featherweight, once if you become champion, then you'll make the move to lightweight?
That's a plan, but you know, I always looking forward to see what's going on in other divisions as well. If there is something quick, I'll fight lightweight. You know, they offered me actually 2-3 times different opponents in lightweight. There was Karma Worthy, Michael Johnson, and Mexican dude, I forgot his name, Transcend AKA. And I
Luis Pena.
Was a Luis Pena as well, and was
actually, well, he's the Italian from AKA.
He used to be AKA. Now
now he's at ATT.
Yeah, but there was actually fourth guy, Mexican guy.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Good striker. He trains at AKA. He fought a month or 2 months ago. I agreed all four times, and unfortunately this fight never happened, but if it would happen, it would be in lightweight, so I'm always down to fight.
It's Gabriel Benitez who fought in May.
Yes, you're right, Gabriel Benitez, that's right.
Yeah, so what happened with those lightweight fights? You just didn't want them, or like, or you just want to go down featherweight, or?
No, I agreed. But so I believe Karma Worthy and Johnson, they match up each other, then something changed. Because it was a weird month, you know, since March and April, the events were canceled. So that was a time when they tried to match all different weight division to each other. I got the fight later against Mike Davis, and then he didn't show up again, and then replaced with Irvin Rivera. And that was really like the crazy experience, but I loved it. It worked out very well for me.
Well, that's the guy I want to touch on, Mike Davis. Do you think you two will ever fight? It's been a while, but he's always pulled out. Are you not even interested in fighting him anymore?
I completely not interested, and I even said this inside the cage. I don't want to cross over my business with this guy. I show up 3 times. He canceled all 3 times. So, I mean, if we fight, he can expect this. I'm going to cancel once. I'm going to cancel twice. I'm going to cancel a third time while he's preparing for me. And the fourth time, I'll show up. You know, he don't deserve a fight against me. I've been super professional and good company man, and I don't deserve such a disrespect, you know, from company. I hope they never schedule with this guy. But you know, I'm mad. If I see him, I'm gonna slap this guy. But it does not work for me too.
Are you mad this fight isn't on Fight Island? This would have been perfect. You and Bruce Leroy on Fight Island, just the promo.
Yes, I asked for it. I wanted to fight Fight Island for this fight. Either this fight or either Edson Barbosa. I know Edson has, Jeremy Stevens next opponent, but hopefully something happens and I replace him and this fight can happen in Fight Island in October maybe. So we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen.
The way you're fighting, you are turning around so quickly. If everything goes your way against Bruce Leroy, like, how many more fights this year do you think you can get in?
I don't know. Hopefully after Bruce Leroy, maybe 2 more fights. Because, I mean, I'm fighting third fight in 5th March. So in 5 March. So since March, 14 May, and now August. You know, so it's just 5 months and 3 fights. So it's been really good for me. So if I finish really quick this fight without injuries, I'm down to fight next week. Hopefully somebody pull out and then I can replace and break the record of the Chechen or Dagestani guy.
Yeah. Everyone knows how good your striking is. You fought so many times Glory Kickboxing, but do you think your ground game is still underrated and everyone kind of just thinks that's your weak spot of your game?
Yeah, people don't know how hard I'm training, and that's the one tricky thing for them, you know. So I have all my teammates are black belts in jiu-jitsu. I have teammates like Daniel Darius, Artur Estrazulas, Ricardo Sasco, Fabricio Werdum, Calvin Gastelum. Everybody's black belt, everybody. And my coaches are so good. I'm just picking up this every day, and I train twice a day, sometimes three times a day. And all I'm watching is these guys, how they roll, how they submit each other, and getting better every day. So I'm excited, really excited to show my ground game skills. I think you guys already saw a couple of matches, my ground game as a ground and pound. But soon you guys are going to see the couple of submissions and jokes.
I talked to Benil Darius for his fight, and he was mentioning that you cause him some fits on the ground. So what's it like being able to work with him? Because you two, he even mentioned that you're kind of that perfect training partner for him, because he obviously knows his striking is the weaker part of his game, and you're obviously an elite striker. And for you, he's obviously that elite grappler you'd work with. So do you think you guys are kind of that perfect training partners for each other?
Yeah, man. We met in 2014 just for one day in August. And since that day, we know that we need each other. And that was the perfect match for us. We are really like super family today. He's a godfather of my son, and we see each other every day. He's just super, super important. He's really like my sibling, my brother, you know, and we help each other so in many different aspects. And even in the last fight he won 2 days ago, if you can see, like right away once fight started, he did a couple of good body kicks, which was kind of my signature tricky ones. And we talked today too. I'm trying to catch a couple of things from him, and he's doing the same for me, and that's how we get better.
What you make of his knockout, spinning back fist, two straight fights, he scored out, knocked the person out cold, you're turning him into a striker.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. He's doing so well. I'm so impressed with his style and his fights. If you guys even remember the very bad fight with Edson Barboza, second round, he got knocked out. But if you guys remember the first round, he was punishing Edson. He was outstriking the one of the best striker in this division. You know, never underestimate Benil Dariush, man. He's amazing. He's one of the top fighter in his division. And I believe sooner or later, he's going to be a champion.
And just last thing, we're obviously over halfway through this year, but where do you see yourself in the featherweight division by the end of this year?
By this year, I definitely gonna be top 10. That's how I see myself. First thing first, we'll fight 29 August. We're gonna see what's gonna happen, and then we'll see what's next. But this, I believe right now, I can't even beat the champion. But I know the UFC has his plans about top 10, top 15, and then championship fights. But once I have opportunity, I'm going to say my words with my punches and kicks.
Well, Giga, thank you so much for doing this again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cole. Thank you always for your interest.
All right, we're joined by UFC middleweight Zach Cummins. Zach, how's it going?
Good, good. Just at the gym, ready to get a workout in. And I don't know, just finish up this long camp I've had.
Yeah, let's just start there. It's obviously been a long one. You're supposed to fight in April. That obviously got canceled. And then since then, have you just been continuing to train, just waiting for your to get a call and a fight offer?
Kind of. So I was really after the fight in November, I wanted a fast turnaround. I wanted to get back in there and basically right my wrong and get back on a win. So I thought I had a fight in January, and the opponent wouldn't take the fight. So it's kind of like, is the date going to work? If not, like, we basically, I agreed on the opponent, and then for whatever reason, just wouldn't take it. So we got pushed back to April and got a new opponent. And then, so yeah, I was training pretty consistently, just getting ready for that. And then the COVID thing happened, and I took a few weeks off. You know, we shut the gym down, spent some time with family, and kind of like deloaded my life a little bit, and just kind of spent time with the little one. And I was outdoors all the time, doing a lot of like walking, hiking, biking, jogging and stuff like that. But I wasn't necessarily in the gym training as much. We get some like some rolling in with a small group and stuff, but I took a little bit of time off, and then basically that didn't last very long. I was probably one of the first gyms in the country to be able to reopen my gym, and we got in, got right back after it, and I was just trying to find a fight as soon as I can, and got this opportunity, and we're almost there. So hopefully nothing else comes up and we can get through with it.
Yeah, how hard has it been? Just like you mentioned, your last fight was in September in Abu Dhabi, that loss, and then it's almost been a full year just having to sit on that loss and not being able to fight. How hard has that been?
I hate it, man. I'm such a competitive person. It drives me insane, after coming up short and coming and taking a loss. So it's given me a lot of time to just dwell on it, but learn from it, and just I guess it's making me more and more hungry. So now at this point where it's like, not that I have to like fight for money, but I mean, it's a good size of my paycheck, for the year. And, I'm just nervous if something happens here and it gets pushed back longer, like how long does this keep happening? So that's also kind of the back of my mind. But for the most part, I just want to get back in and perform better, so that's kind of, I'm right on the level of both things, of like, hey, like, can we work, and get paid, but also, can I go in there and put on a show for the fans?
And your opponent, Alessio Chirico, is this someone you had your eye on, or is this kind of who the UFC offered you?
They offered him, and I had I've cornered against him before, but I mean, he's not on my radar really. I was kind of, I'm always looking at those top 15 guys, or maybe, if I need to take a fight right outside top 15 to keep me back to those guys. That's the level I think I'm capable of, and those are the guys that I want. So I'm normally fighting, these tough opponents that are normally like the winner to win the fight gets the top 15, either opponent next or ranked or ranked themselves. So I was kind of surprised that this is the matchup I got. I can't overlook him by any means. I mean, anytime anybody in the UFC is a tough fight. So, but I was a little surprised whenever this is the matchup I got. But I mean, take what I can get. I just want to get in there and fight and perform.
He is primarily a striker. So do you like this matchup better than your last one? Because we obviously know Omari's the guy that likes to just really grind people out, put them in the clinch, like to wrestle guys, where I don't think you're going to have to deal with any of that against Alessio.
I mean, I've seen him wrestle some guys. I think, you can't get too comfortable in there because, that's whenever he might shoot, and then it doesn't take a great shot to take you down if you're not expecting it. So I'm going to go in there and put my game plan together and be the best me I can be and not really worry about, everything he's going to offer. Yeah, I mean, he's going to strike, but I've seen him wrestle. So, I'm expecting both from him. I typically, once I start striking with somebody and land some hard shots, they're normally looking to take me down anyway. So it wouldn't surprise you if he shoots on me, honestly.
He is on a 2-fight losing streak. If you lose 3 in the UFC, that's kind of that number where they look to cut you. So do you think he's going to be that added motivation and get a fight like extra hard just because if he loses this, his job might be on the line?
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm sure he's going to be just as motivated, for this win as I am. I don't do 2 losses in a row. That's not my style, and I'm not about to do it now. I did my very first time I lost, I overlooked the opponent, fell short the next one, even though, I probably could have stopped the fight. But, it's one of those where I kind of come back with something to prove the next time after I take a loss. So I don't want my walking papers, so I'm it's down between me and him, man, I'm sorry, but I'm keeping my job.
How do you see this fight playing out? Because we obviously know you have a lot of finishes. You're a guy that you even submitted Trevin Giles, which surprised a lot of people because everyone thought Giles was that jiu-jitsu guy. We obviously know how good or how powerful you are. So how do you see you getting it done?
I mean, like you said, I got a lot of different finishing, just diversity. You know, it's one of those where I can, I've got a lot of power in both hands. I can knock you out. I can drop people and follow up with some hard strikes. Or, you know, I can find some submissions and scramble. So, it just kind of depends, you know, if he's going to stand with me, you know, I mean, we'll see. Maybe if I crack him with something, I mean, he does got a good chin. I'll give him credit. I've seen him hit hard and he, you know, stays in there and keeps doing what he does. So, but I do think I have all the finishing factor for this fight. I don't see him submitting me. I don't see him putting me away with striking. You know, really, the only way I feel like his way to victory is staying away from me and just kind of like peppering some light strikes just to like throw up a punch count. You know, I'm not a huge volume guy, but you know, when they land, they count. So, you know, I really feel like that's his only way to victory. I can land something hard on our feet. We can go to the ground, and I've got a lot of finishing power there. So. I don't see exactly, I never really like, oh, I'm going to do this and this and this, you know, anytime I'm like, oh, this is going to go to the ground, I end up dropping somebody like, oh, never mind, you know, or if I think I'm going to be able to knock him out, it might go to the ground. So I know that I can finish anywhere, and I just go out there and just kind of go where the fight takes me and look for a finish anywhere.
And your last fight, like we mentioned, was in Abu Dhabi, that insane heat. What's it going to be like to be now fighting in a well air conditioned venue? Yeah.
I can't express how happy I am not to be. I think Fight Island now isn't near as bad. I heard a lot of things that it's not near like it was. I mean, I've never complained about an environment. I've never complained about, you know, a situation. But I wish the real me was able to fight Omari, and that wasn't it, man. It was miserable. It was so hot. The air conditioner was broke. I fought during the day, so the sun was still out. It's like 116 degrees out. Man, I'm not used to that. You know, it's just something that I'm not used to dealing with. I couldn't even warm up. I was in the back, like, stretching, and I was profusely sweating, like, I mean, laying on the mat with ice on my head. Like, I couldn't even, like, get a real warm-up in. It was terrible. It was a miserable, miserable thing. But, you know, I mean, I signed up for it and had to deal with it. But, yeah, I can't. I'm just excited to, like, be back indoors in a real building with real AC and treat this like a professional, you know, fight how it should be and not just some outside tent thing that, I don't know, like some bar room. Amateur deal is what it felt like, man. It was terrible.
But with the Apex, it's gonna have no fans your first time doing that, and the smaller octagon. What do you think that's gonna be like for you with both those things, no fans and the smaller octagon?
I'm kind of interested about the no fans. So like, I was on the Ultimate Fighter, so yeah. I have a little bit of experience with you know, with that type of environment. You know, I feed off the fans for one. I do like that, but I don't think it's gonna affect me that much. I'm kind of excited to like be able to rewatch my fight after, because, you know, like I said, I'm a power guy, and I do little movements that and little things that like a lot of people don't see from the outside, but when you're in front of me, you notice it. But whenever I land, it like it has these deep thuds, and like without the fans, I'm really excited to kind of like you'll be able to like really take in the whole thing of what I can do, I feel like, with the fight. So I think the fans at home would get a little bit more from it, and it'd be kind of cool to hear.
And like we mentioned, this is your first fight of this year. Barring everything goes well, like, are you hoping you can at least get another one in by the end of the year?
Man, yeah, I'll be in. If this fight goes the way I think it can go, hopefully I can turn around and, you know, a month or so and get back in immediately. Like, as soon as the first opening available, I can get right back in. And hopefully I can do that a couple of times. I mean, if somehow I can get three in this year, I'm in. You know, I know that's going to be hard, but at minimum two, I would like to have two in, but if we can bust through these things and not be injured, not be hurt, and be able to knock three out, man, I'm down for it.
Are you still out there, Truth, like Anthony Smith and all those guys?
So I've been out and about a little bit. So I was in Denver for about a month, you know, with Anthony. And then last week we were both in Vegas because we had a lot of teammates fighting. Anthony was doing the broadcast booth and stuff. So we were out training at the PI and together and stuff like that. So, and then I came back home to Kansas City for a week, and I'm getting ready to head right back out to Denver for that last hard week with Anthony.
Well, that's what I want to touch on. Anthony's fighting on the card too. So how much better does that make it where you guys are around the same weight class and you're preparing for that exact same date? So you guys are peaking at the same time.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we're competitive. I mean, like we're good friends, but we're also competitive in the gym. So, you know, we're always trying to push each other. And I mean, we're trying to make each other better, but we're always trying to get our little bragging points if we can. So, you know, with that, and then also being on the same card, which means we're trying to peak at the same time, you know, where it's not like, oh, he's just starting camp, he might be tired, I'm in shape. Like, you know, we're pushing each other pretty good. Also, here in Kansas City, back home, I have Julian Marquez on the same card as well. You know, so
who's making his comeback?
Yeah, making his comeback. So even when I'm home, I have him drilling with me, partnering with me. You know, us peaking at the same time, pushing each other. So, both locations that I go, I've got one of each. So, it's been a fun camp, honestly.
Just a few more things with Anthony. Are you surprised how much many people are like overlooking him? Like the betting odds came over his fight. He's like a +300 underdog, which I don't get at all. I think people are taking way too much stock in that last fight where he was doing really good and he just kind of tired himself out.
Man, does he have a tough fight? Yes. You know, that kid's very, very tough, and it's a tough fight. But, man, if you know Anthony, man, he is good. Like, I've seen him take a beating over and over and over again, come back and find ways of finishing. You know, he can let you beat on him for a round, and then whenever you're tired and more down, you know, he can come back, put you in a bad position, and finish you. So, I mean, you know, he did it with, you know, multiple of his last opponents, Gustafson, Volkan. Like, there's some top level guys that he's been able to weather the storm and come back and just, you know, put him away. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I would never count him as that big of an underdog. Is it a tough fight? Absolutely. But man,
yeah,
Anthony's phenomenal. Again, he's got so many finishing factors. He's got great power on his feet, some slick submissions. If he gets to your back, man, you're in a lot of trouble. So, I'm surprised he was that big of an odd difference.
Just two more things. Whenever you fight, I always can't believe you used to fight at welterweight. You look like a guy that is a massive middleweight that could be a light heavyweight. How the hell did you ever make 170?
Stupid decisions. That's why. I don't know. Like, you know, my whole career before the UFC, I fought at light heavyweight. I fought at middleweight. And then there's, you know, I was on the Ultimate Fighter. I was fine. Like, I've never, like, just been thrown around like ragdoll. Like, I don't have the power. But something just told me, like, oh, if I'm gonna compete with the best guys in the world, let's drop down where I'm, like, in the best shape I could possibly be in and cut a lot of weight and, like, be a lot bigger than everybody when I fight. And for the most part, it worked for me. You know, I was walking dead for the weight cut, made weight, and then – you know, I felt pretty good in the fight. But, you know, I was losing to these guys. A couple of fights I lost was speed. It had nothing to do with how fast I or how big I was. You know, these guys were just fast enough to get in and get out. You know, get in, land some strikes, get out, and just kind of outstrike me and out-volume me. Yeah, so, I mean, it was one of those where, you know, then the weight cuts started getting worse and worse. And it was just like, you know, let's go back up. I'll be the little faster guy. And my power is going to follow up with me. So, I mean, I'm happy it prolonged my career with UFC, but it was rough.
And with, assuming you get your hand raised over Alessio, is there anyone you have in mind of who you want to fight? Like, I think an Omari rematch would make a lot of sense because he's coming off that loss to Weidman, or just, is there any guys you have your eye on?
I'm not a big rematch guy. I would like that one just because of the the scenario. I don't know. It was just it left a bad taste in my mouth, you know. But I'm fine with that. I would take it. I'd take the Weidman fight. Anybody in the top 15, I would like that. I would like that matchup so I can get, you know, prove that I can get a number next to my name. But if not, whoever is between me and those number guys to get to there, I mean, I don't really need a specific person. Omari is still ranked, so that makes sense. I mean, that would give me what I want, but I mean, I really don't care.
All right, well, Zach, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Appreciate it. Thanks.